Hello and welcome to No Directions 2017 Gen Con Seminar Coverage. Special thanks to our Gen Con volunteers, Eric Bring the Knives and Andrew Mullins. For more seminars and other great Pathfinder content, visit NoDirectionPodcast.com.
So we are good to get things rolling. Welcome to Writing for Paizo. Let's go ahead and get some introductions going, and we will be talking about all the ways that you can get started writing for us or other RPG companies and similar industries. So
yeah, and if we have time, we'll also cover a little bit about best practices for those of you who are already getting a foot in the door, ways to not only get that first assignment, but continue to get assignments, because that's really, I assume that that's what most of you are here about, is to establish a few credits writing for tabletop RPGs.
In fact, possibly one of the nice ways to start this off is... who here is looking to get into RPG writing for the first time?
Okay.
That's good information to know.
And who here is looking to, who's had an assignment or two for various companies, is looking to look at building something? All right. Wonderful. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and get us started. My name is Amanda Hammond-Kuntz. I'm the development coordinator at Paizo. And at the moment, I'm doing a lot of assigning the soft cover lines for Pathfinder, so the player companion and the campaign setting.
My name is John Compton. I'm the organized play lead developer, so I'm in charge of Starfinder Society, Pathfinder Society, and Adventure Card Guild, all of which are really good ways for somebody to get a start writing for Paizo.
And I'm Joe Piscini. I'm a relatively new developer at Paizo, and I'm working on Adventure Path Back Matter, so articles, bestiary, stuff like that. And I'm looking for people to write things, so...
So we thought that we'd get started with a little bit about how we each got into the professional RPG business. Everybody's path is a little bit different. There's no right or wrong way, so just because something worked for us doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do it. But it is lived experience that might be helpful for you to know. Starting with myself, I have a journalism degree, and I was a news reporter and editor before I started thinking about getting into the RPG business, but I had played RPGs, tabletop RPGs, since I was about 15 or 16 years old, and I was looking to get into an industry that I really loved and sort of merge those professional skills with personal interests. And I started looking for some freelance work in the realm of 2010, talking to different companies, feeling like, you know, I could do some freelance editing because that was a skill set that I felt like was a good way to get into the door. And I ended up meeting with Wes Schneider from Paizo and some other folks and learning about opportunities that were available through third-party companies like Kobold Press. Wolfgang Bauer was very instrumental in my early years. And basically, it was just a lot of meet and greet in that first year and giving my business card to people, telling them what my skill set was. I feel like having the professional background in writing and editing really gave me a step up because I already had established skills that RPG companies knew that they wanted. My business card, second year I started doing this, actually said writer-editor on it, and that opened a lot of doors for people saying, we need writers and we need editors and we need people, you know, who are wordsmiths and professionals with it. So I built some credits with third-party companies, mostly Kobold Press, and then I started getting some freelance assignments from Paizo through my connection with Wes Schneider and really proving that I could do the work and being able to handle bigger and bigger and bigger assignments all the way up to being the lead developer for a hardcover. And that was actually sort of the resume that I put down when I applied for the job at Paizo. So that was my path. Go ahead, John.
I got my start through the organized play program. I didn't even go into it thinking that working in RPGs was something that I could do, much less that I would have any opportunities doing writing. I got started really early on, around 2010, met with Mike Brock, who was our campaign coordinator for several years, when he was just about to be named the venture captain of Georgia. He interviewed for the campaign coordinator position about a year later, and met with several of us who were organizing stores in the area and said, okay, let's determine what the policy for the campaign is going to be going forward. And so we came up with a lot of good ideas. One of them was that he wanted to sanction all of the 32-page modules. And I said, 32-page modules. I've never really looked at those. So I started going through them thinking, if we're going to sanction these, we're going to need all the items. So I wrote down a list of all the items. At one point, he sent me an email saying, okay, I'm going to need a list of all the items. And within 2 minutes, I was able to send a reply. So sometimes working ahead like that can have some fun dividends. So I ended up basically behind the scenes for about 2 years, writing all of the sanctioning materials and a bunch of the boons and convention rewards and things like that, and doing some adaptation with basically no credit. Not necessarily the best path, but I thought it was a fun little hobby. And that all came to a head when Mike decided that he wanted to have 20 different auction items to have at PaizoCon 2012. Oh, by the way, PaizoCon 2012 is in about 10 days, and we need these with a full week to develop them. So can you get them done in 3 business days? While I was still working a full-time job. So it was sort of add another 50 hours to my work week and send them all off. And then I got approached by Mark Moreland at PaizoCon. At first I thought I was in trouble for something, and then he asked if I wanted to write a scenario. Started writing that, and right before I turned it in, I got an email from F. Wesha Snyder, up until recently our editor-in-chief, saying, there might be a part-time developer position. What's that mean, Wes? I don't know. Okay. And then I turned in my scenario, and within a couple of days it was, maybe it's a full-time editor job. And so interviewed for that and quickly joined the Organized Play campaign as developer. Went through my, month of crash course training, and then got to run the whole campaign. Woo.
Yeah. We move quickly at Paizo.
Hey, Joe.
Joe, speaking of moving quickly at Paizo.
Yeah, I know, seriously.
Well, that's all very impressive, you two. I'll be much shorter. I was an editor at Nintendo, actually, for a little while, and then met Judy Bauer, the managing editor and kick-ass person, and did one freelance assignment for Paizo, an editing assignment, actually, and then came on as an editor, and then was hired on full-time as an editor, and then now I'm a developer. How did that happen? I don't know.
You kept saying yes, Joe.
Oh,
yeah.
And you asked really good questions.
That's my mistake.
But you also did quite a bit of freelance. You did some freelance writing for
and
us
some
as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
it was just... I would trace it back to when somebody who knew Judy asked me what I did, like what kind of work I was looking for, and I wasn't, even though I'd edited professionally for years at that point, I still wasn't really comfortable saying that I was an editor for some reason. Like, I just didn't have the confidence, even though I'm good enough, I suppose. And so I finally just was like, I'll just tell this person, I don't know that well, that I'm an editor. And she knew Judy, and that got me. So confidence is something I don't have, but it's really important, it turns out. And just going forward, hey, do you want to write something for, because, you're here in the office, would you like to write something for this book? I was like, oh, sure, okay. It's like, oh, I can do this too. So my path is, not a great... Great one. I'm a cautionary tale more than anything.
But it is illustrated that there are, again, as Amanda said, lots of different ways to get started.
Yeah.
And there's not necessarily any one right way.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you really just need to find the path that works for you, and sometimes it's fortuitous, and sometimes it's almost serendipitous, and sometimes there's so much work behind the scenes that happens that people don't see. There is no wrong way. I want to sort of talk a little bit about what Joe just mentioned, and that's confidence, right? So I think a lot of you here are looking for your first gig. You're not really sure how to start out. You're not really sure how some of us got into the industry. I know for me personally, confidence was a really big thing as well. I was, frankly, just very desperate to get out of the industry that I was in at the time. So I thought, I have nothing to lose. I'll just go up and ask all of these, super famous people that have names in all of these books that I love to give me, freelance work. And it was very nerve-wracking. But that very first meeting that I had with Wes back in 2010, I had asked about freelance editing jobs because I felt like that was probably where the foot in the door would end up. And at the time, Paizo was not doing freelance editing. It was all in-house. And he told me that, and his next response was, but what would you think about design? And in my head, I'm thinking the same thing that Joe is, oh my gosh, I've just played these games, I've just run these games, I can't be a designer. Luckily, my brain works a little faster, or my mouth maybe works a little faster than my brain, and I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to try that, I'd like to do homebrew, let's give it a shot. So, I certainly had to build up a lot of credits and experience in the third-party realm, but, just I feel like that sort of response and that sort of like trusting in yourself to know that you deserve the chance and should take the chance is a really big thing, because you know, it had never occurred to me before to try to be a designer or developer. It just didn't seem like it was an option. So just sort of like knowing that it's out there and it's possible, and you know, if you work really hard and you have the right skill sets and you're a professional and you meet your deadlines and you write to word count, all of those things, if you are able to do that stuff, you can do this.
And so some of us got slightly faster starts. I know mine was just sort of like, boom, okay, I'm over here.
Yeah.
But working your way up is really important. And a lot of times when you are first getting started in writing for RPGs, you're going to get smaller assignments. You won't go straight from stranger to senior designer or anything like that. So be prepared to have some shorter assignments. It might be, in the case of Paizo publications, it could be a monster in the back of an AP Back Matter bestiary. So that's 1,400 words, two pages. It could be a short article. It could be, I'd like you to write two quests, which would be a total of 4,000 words of adventure content. That's not a huge assignment,
right,
but it is a really important proof of concept for us.
Exactly.
That is your audition.
Yep.
If you send in a monster that is engaging and interesting to read and grammatically solid.
Yeah. It's your chance to make an impression.
Exactly. If you send in something bland or something that has not been proofread or the like, then we're going to look at that and say, well, we gave this person a try. We will do what we as developers do and make it better, and we'll kind of nod and continue looking.
Right. And then we'll assume maybe this person's not quite ready. We might, you know, give them some advice to go try third-party people, but, you know, it might be another little bit of time before you're able to get some more Paizo stuff. Honestly, just going off what John said, the first thing that Wes asked me to do is pitch him monster concepts for Back Matter bestiary. So sometimes it can just be little things, but, you know, for me, that was his way to gauge if I actually had cool ideas and if I, you know, sort of fit into what they were looking for this specific assignment. So it can be literally anything.
And when it comes to pitching, that's going to vary a little bit by company. Paizo has very little capacity, legal or otherwise, to accept unsolicited pitches and submissions. So, for example, if you have a brilliant idea for an entire 6-volume AP and you send us the whole thing, and it's an attachment, we are just going to delete the email.
We
cannot legally open that. So be prepared to work through the channels that each company provides. Certain companies will put out open calls and pitch sessions, or even say, come to us with something you've already written. We'll see about getting it published. And so that's going to be different by each one. Paizo.com has a third-party sub-message board in which there is even a sticky thread in which a bunch of third-party publishers will go on there and say, all right, I have this assignment. It's this many words. This is the deadline. This is going to be the payment. Private message me if you're interested. And that's been going on for several years now and seems to still be going really strong.
Yeah.
And just watching for one of those and saying, why, yes, I could do a 6-page article about magical doors. Might not have thought to do that before, but that's one of the joys of writing to spec, which is to say, we have a contract, we have an outline, we want that. Not something else that, not any other brilliant idea that you have. We need you to write to that outline. Pitching for us, not so great, unless we're asking just on a sort of audition-y, getting-to-know-you basis.
That doesn't happen very often. It's funny. It feels like that happens in two very distinct places. It happens with people who are very, very new and untested, and it happens with people that we trust really well, who we know are going to do a good job. And, you know, we have a best area of monsters to fill, and we've got 3 slots, and we say, okay, give us 3 really cool ideas, and we know that the stuff that we're going to get from them is going to be cool. So, that's certainly not, you know, the case for everybody, but if you get something like that, that's sort of where that's coming from. It seems like a good point now to talk a little bit about third-party publishers and, like, fanzines like Wayfinder. You guys want to go in that direction?
I'm totally on board with that.
Okay, so how many of you here are familiar with third-party publishers and the way that works for Paizo? Okay, most of you guys are. All right, so you all know that all of Paizo Paizo's rules are open content, and so there are a number of other smaller publishers that create adventures in their own campaign settings and their own rule supplements that are third-party that are not published through Paizo that are published through these other small companies. These are really great ways for you to get a foot in the door and to get a lot of writing samples that you can then send to us at Paizo as a proof that you are good at a certain type of writing or a certain subset of what it is that you want to do. So,
and just the fact that you have been published by someone shows a certain amount of commitment in your professional life. Another thing that it does is it gives us an industry contact, and mm-hmm. we can say, all right, this person says they did a 6-page article about magical doors. How was it really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because oftentimes products will come out being brilliant and pristine, and then you can talk to the people who worked on it and be like, so what happened is like, oh, well, we got a pretty crummy turnover, but we made it great.
Yeah, we rewrote it. A secret that's not such a secret is that the industry is very small, and most of us have worked with most of the third-party publishers out there. If we haven't, we probably know somebody who has worked in that company, and so it's very easy for us to reach out to the owner of a company or the publisher of a company and ask about somebody. So it's very important to approach this like a professional, right? Make good connections. Don't burn bridges. Stick to all of the things that John mentioned, like your deadlines and your word count, if that is the route that you're going. And, just approach it like a job. It's probably a job that you love. It's a job you really want, but it's still a job. And, if you do things for third-party publishers, like low deadlines, like don't write to spec, like if you're, difficult to work with in email, or,
cautionary tales.
That gets around very fast. If you get a reputation as somebody that, is hard to work with, we don't have a lot of time for that.
And every once in a while, people try to play, mommy off of daddy at Paizo, and they will work with one of us and totally blow it and then be like, well, I totally blew things with John. Dear Joe!
Yeah.
But the thing is that we talk to each other a lot.
Yes,
we do.
Our
beginning of the week meeting in which it's like, hey, John, why does it look like you haven't slept at all? Well, I have this freelancer. That sort of thing happens a lot, and it might also be, oh wow, I'm done really early with this development project. Why is that? Because it was brilliant and great, and suddenly it was like a vulture call for developers. And so I'm like, well, I have a back matter article. Can I? Who's that?
Yeah. This doesn't sound like me at all.
It's not necessarily you. So we talk both for good and for ill, and doing well with one of us can very quickly get you jobs with the rest of us.
Yeah. I would add that, we're all unique snowflake special people. Snowflake's not the word I wanted to use. In any case,
too late. It's on the record.
If you're meeting deadlines and you're turning over decent work, sometimes, personalities just don't mesh as well as others. Like, I will have one developer tell me, never work with that person. Another one say, they're the best ever. And so there can be kind of minor, that's a minor difference
So it can be good to build up a relationship with specific developers, right, mm-hmm. That you work well together with them, and they'll say good things about you to other folks, and it can work out really well. As far as third-party publishers go, it can be very easy to actually get your foot in the door with them if you approach them, like I said, as a professional, have a business card. If you have any professional writing experience, mentioning that off the bat is a really good idea. And just approaching them at places like here at this convention or at other smaller conventions or, Googling them. Most of them will have an email up for open calls, most of the bigger ones that I'm thinking of. Kobold Press is a great one. Wolfgang's not here at the show this year, but if you Google Kobold Press, they do have a sort of a running open call that you can submit stuff to. Legendary Games is a great one. They're selling some stuff here at the show, and the publisher, Jason Nelson, is here. Just making contact with those folks, and you'll be surprised at how quickly, when you meet one or two people, if you do really good work, that you'll get pointed in other directions, and that's how all of us have so many credits at a whole bunch of companies. It's just because it's all, this one cohesive whole. Mm-hmm. So.
And, you can get experience with a wide variety of different assignments, so you could be doing, with all these third-party publishers, strictly rules-based mechanics. If you're really keen to be writing for Galarian, though, and you're looking to build up your repertoire a bit, there's Wayfinder.
Yep.
Wayfinder is not so much a third-party publisher as it is a fan-based magazine publication. One of the big differences you'll find is that it won't pay you. It practically only charges for the purpose of printing materials when it does.
Yeah.
And what that means is that it's able to play with our canon and our setting. So if you really want to write something really cool about Vrissia or Ustalav or the like, that is a great outlet because they're able to do that, whereas anybody who is a for-profit company or the like, legal details notwithstanding, cannot touch our IP. So Wayfinder can be an excellent way of doing that, especially because we're increasingly familiar with all of the stuff that we're publishing.
Yeah.
And so when it comes time for, like, next month's publications, you'll be like, all right, here are all the new things. We're like, what do you mean new? We submitted this 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. Whereas Wayfinder is always something fresh and unexpected, and so we tend to devour that pretty quickly and look at the names as well. So that can be a really fun way to get your foot in the door and, again, get a little bit of publishing credit.
Yeah, so honestly, I think we mentioned this a little bit before, but sending us an email that is simply, hey, I met you at this convention and I got your business card and I want to write for Paizo, as opposed to an email with a reminder of the context in which you met, a couple of writing samples from Wayfinder, some information about what it is that you feel the most comfortable writing for, that is going to go so much farther than that first email because that has saved us a lot of time. And we are super busy, although we are always open and eager and we want new writers to write for us and we need new writers. We need folks that we know that we can count on, and we need folks that we know that when we take a chance on new people that it's more likely to work out than not. And so showing that you've done your homework and showing that you've listened to the stuff that we've said at this panel and other panels like it really goes a long way toward that.
Should we tell them the password that we came up with for this?
I thought we weren't going to discuss the password,
never mind.
Joe.
Never mind.
Cool.
There is no password.
A little bit more with setting stuff. A little bit more with setting stuff as we briefly cover up this password.
cover John. Go.
Is that a lot of the things that we assign are intrinsically tied into our setting. And so...
Yeah.
Having at least a basic understanding of our setting is really, really helpful in doing things. So if you say, oh, I want to write more gunslinger options, this takes place in, I don't know, I figure you probably have like pseudo-Japan, so they have gunslingers. Bam! No, we don't have that. Not at all. Please look at anything in our setting. What you have written will not fit. So if you have that starting context, then that will help you a great deal. Many of our assignments go out with a recommended reading list of similar things that we have published, and we can get you the PDFs for and dropped in your Paizo.com downloads so that you can do the background research and know everything that we have said and expand upon it.
As you say, you don't need to know everything
right.
before you write anything, but... You need to know everything about what you're
exactly.
writing about.
So. Yeah, you do need to know how to essentially be a researcher, right? Yeah. When you're sent the list of reading material, we expect you to read it through. We expect you to understand it. And if you, send back something that clearly proves that you haven't read anything about the country that the thing is set in, then that's going to be sort of a red flag for us.
And there are different assignments, right? Some we ask you to be creative, but often... We want you to.
That's often like a 201 level thing, right? Yeah, usually.
Exactly.
And that's sort of another interesting point, the Wahoo point of the newer folks.
That's a password.
Wahoo.
Yeah. Oh no, I said password.
So there are some articles that are strictly synthesis where we're asking you to pull together like canon from 20 different publications and make it into one concise article while adding a few extra things to help bring it up to speed. And there are other ones where we are just like, okay, we have written a grand total of one paragraph about this thing. Give me 10 pages about the plane of water. And so that can be a lot of creative expression time. Especially for your first couple of assignments, the temptation is so great to just show all of your creative ideas all at once. You have 2 pages of content, shove them all in as an attempt to impress us. but then you start getting something that is excessively busy or is just over the top and is what we call Wahoo.
Yeah.
It is so creatively pushy that it no longer makes sense.
And it's incongruent with the other things we publish. That's really the big thing, right? You should, if you are wanting to write for Paizo, when we talk about doing your homework and reading your references, that also means just having a basic understanding of the types of material that we publish. And so, you know, obviously we have a lot of fantasy. We're very creative. There are a lot of things, you know, that are pretty wondrous, but we also, you know, tend to draw the line at things like, you know, flying gunslingers with, you know, a metal eyeball and a magic gun shooting out their feet.
They think that this is a halfling commoner too, but really he's a polymorph manticore with a quest for vengeance. Also, he personally took down Tarbathon.
Yeah.
Oh, Next time on Galarian.
That's what we're looking
Halflings
for.
Halflings of Galarian, right? Too. Yeah.
So that's the sort of thing we do prefer to avoid. And this also brings up communication. So you're going to have a certain writing window in which to complete your assignment. And if you have certain ideas that seem to push the envelope on the assignment or that you really just need a second set of eyes on, your developer can oftentimes be that sounding board. And you can be like, all right, everything's going fine, but I have this halfling that's actually a manticore idea. Is that cool? And at that point we can say...
Yeah.
No, or yes, but we also need, or yes, but not Tarbathon. We can provide that guidance.
Yes, and it should go without saying, but any developer that you work with, whether it's one of us, whether it's somebody from a third-party company, if they ask you to do a thing, don't argue with them. Don't tell them that they're wrong. Don't tell them that your idea is better. All that's going to do is annoy us, and then we're going to tell our friends, and we're going to say... Oh, this person thinks that they know what I want better than I do. I don't really want to work with them anymore. And then John's not going to want to put up with that. And Joe's not going to want to put up with that. And all of a sudden, what you think might be a lively debate via email has just closed a lot of doors for you.
And when we are asking, it's not just because we are egotistical, self-centered maniacs.
Well, I mean, we are.
Not all of us.
Okay. thank you, Joe, for but... But we might have something that we really need to accomplish with whatever it is that we assigned you. For Pathfinder Society, I need to get certain plot points across. It might be critical that that is just a halfling because we have plans for that halfling.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might need it not to be a manticore because we have plans for manticores. Or we have just already assigned three other adventures with manticores and... For the love of Desna, please, no more manticores. There are lots of things that we're trying to juggle and keep in the air and consider that might not be immediately apparent through the outline that we've provided you. And we can convey that as best we can by email and the like, but sometimes there's just a bigger picture concept that we need to consider and we need you to cooperate with.
Yeah. The bottom line is you can't see all of the gears moving in the background, right? And that really applies across the board. You don't necessarily know why your assignment is worded the way that it is or why it says, you know, you must have an encounter that involves, I don't know, you know, a manticore. You must have a manticore encounter. It could be, usually it says, but sometimes it doesn't. It could be that the cover of the product was ordered that way. And so if there's not a fight with the manticore, the developer just has to grumble, delete one of your accounts, and create a new encounter because it's on the cover and you can't change the art order. I've had to do that a couple of times, and it's a big pain in the butt. But you also can't know what other writers are assigned what or what they've been told. Sometimes you can, but oftentimes you don't. You don't know what other books in that line have been assigned if you're not working on them. And, you know, even when you're still first just trying to get started and you're emailing folks and if you're not hearing back right away, it's not about you. It's always on this end. There might be something going on. They might be on vacation and trying to keep up with their email via phone. They might be traveling at a convention. There might be some sort of... just crazy, you know, deadline-oriented thing. If you don't hear it back right away, don't take it personally. Just try to send another email, like, a couple of weeks later, see if you hear back. And, you know, just trust that, like, we operate in good faith and that we do want to work with you. We are just very, very busy folks.
And all of those warnings, questions are still good.
Yeah.
Yes, questions are still very good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One thing that I don't think that we covered when we talked about Wayfinder was the rolling open call that's up on the message boards. So if you're interested in writing for Wayfinder, there's a very specific way you can find out what the next issue's theme is and what they are looking to publish. Go to paizo.com, search for Wayfinder open call. I think the first thing that will pop up on the forums is that sticky post, and then if you just go down to the last post, Tim Nightingale is the person who posts what it is that the issue is about, and we'll say it's usually regional based, right? It's usually like we want something based in Nadal, or we want So that's a really good way, and then you can write something, work on it, you know, get your editorial skills to where you're comfortable with, and submit it from there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of open calls.
Yeah.
We rehearsed this so hard.
So open call. Paizo's held several different open calls over the course of its history. We have had, really early on, there was a, hey, pitch us a scenario, a full 10,000-word adventure. And then at that time, Josh Frost and later Mark Moreland would look at those pitches and be like, that sounds pretty cool, go write it. And sometimes that was able to work out well. Sometimes it was, you're really good at writing a 250-word pitch. Putting together an adventure, not so much. What we then moved on to is the idea of submitting a quest. That's one of the 2,000-word adventures. It's approximately one encounter. It might have like a little talkie scene ahead of time, or a trap, or a haunt in addition. But it also has a beginning, middle, end. It fits within the Pathfinder Society construct or way of putting together our adventures. And that's a much more comprehensive way of showing, oh, hey, yeah, I know all the little pieces that go into this. I know to look for development text. You have a rewards section. That's pretty cool. I know a little bit about the Pathfinder Society, and I haven't sent them to go, you know, kill a village. these sorts of things are all really good audition-style writing sample elements. And so I inherited that. I've been going through a lot of the backlog there. I've even reopened it on occasion. For the past year or so, it's been in kind of stasis. We are looking toward the end of this calendar year at reopening that. Before we get it all up and running, though, we're going to be working to clear out the remainder of the backlog for anybody who may have submitted to that earlier and not heard back yet. I'm going to be sending out emails and basically saying, I have you on record for having submitted this thing on this date. Are you still interested in feedback? And then if I hear from you in that time, I will totally send you feedback, or one of my colleagues will help me in doing so. And then we're going to clear out that inbox and then reissue the open call. But to be clear, it will be as a writing sample and less as something that will be directly published. Because we, when the Quest thing first started, we had Kobold Quarterly, which was a magazine that was really, really good at taking a quest-sized adventure and publishing it as an article. After we did two quests, Kobold Quarterly stopped being published. So what was a great open call idea sort of became an awkward one, and we've been adapting with it ever since. But they have served as wonderful writing samples, and I've already gotten a good half dozen authors out of that process who have been excellent. And so I'm really, really excited to be reopening the open call. But on top of that, with the open call, I mean, it doesn't just have to be Pathfinder Society, now that we're thinking about it. We could be doing things like, maybe we want you to work on a bestiary entry, a 1,400-word entry to show us how good you are at creating a monster. Or, I hear we have a new RPG out there. So perhaps we are...
No, we sold that.
Oh, well, never mind. It's all done. No more Starfinder. Go home. But there is the possibility for us to re-examine the open call and perhaps even add in a Starfinder element, because we'll be looking for authors there, too. But especially for those of us who have been provided a welcome means of getting our foot in the door, it's really important to us to have that same sort of invitation to you. So we are looking at rebooting that in the near future.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. We have about 15 minutes left. Do we want to open it to questions?
Quick little things on feedback and quick turnaround.
Okay. Excellent.
So one thing can help get you a lot of good press at our company, and one thing can get you a little bit of negative press. The good press thing is... once you've done a couple of pieces for us and we've determined that you are reliable and tend to send in clean things, sometimes the poo hits the fan at the Paizo offices, at any publishing company, and we realize, oh no, for this 64-page book, we only ordered 60 pages. How did that happen? Or, oh, we ordered 64 pages. These four are terrible. Or, never happened. The author disappeared on us.
Or we never should have ordered it this way, and it came in, and they did what we were asking them to do, but we can't publish this.
Mistakes were made. Yeah. Either way, we need a quick turnaround, and you will be an absolute hero if you can, in a much shorter window than normal, get us that short article or what have you in good shape.
Yeah.
Adam Daigle really made his name. He's our managing developer now. Really made his name on being an emergency author, where it was just like, hey, buddy, it's Friday. On Monday, we start development. Two monsters? ?
Yeah, that is totally how Adam really just rose to the top as a freelancer, because Wes knew that if he asked Adam on a Friday evening that there was an emergency and they needed a monster or two monsters, I think he even did it once with three monsters, by Monday morning, he knew that Adam could do it and that Adam would do it well and that Adam knew exactly what was needed. And so every single time that happened, that just moved him up a few notches in everybody's esteem. And you know, when it came time to hire a developer, I believe they went directly to him and said, hey, would you like to come out here? And so getting yourself in that position where you are known as professional, where you're known as reliable, where we trust you and we know that we can go to you immediately for a specific problem that just needs to happen, that is absolutely invaluable. And I think all of us up here at some point have been that person for folks. And it's obviously benefited us very well.
And if your intention or if your aim is not just to be a freelance author, but is to work with a full-time job, similar to what we do, then the more you can make your turnovers so that they are like what we would do and have done, the more we can look at you and say, wow, this person turns in work that is developed quality.
Absolutely.
So we're always looking to boost people and consider who our next prospects are in that regard. As far as the other end of your reputation in the industry goes, two little subpoints. One, feedback. We will try to get you feedback as much as we can. There's a milestone part of your writing process, which is you send in what you have. It's sort of a midpoint, and we confirm that you are working on it and haven't died and that it's, you know, in decent shape. And we'll try to get you some feedback then. And then after the fact, hopefully, our schedules permitting, we will get you some feedback. So that's an opportunity to learn. But you'll also be getting feedback from the public. They might say, wow, this feature was dumb. And there are gracious ways to take that feedback publicly. They might say, wow, this spread of options was really cool. And if it's something that the developer rewrote of yours, it's probably not a good idea to jump on and say, yes, I sure am a genius. If the feat was borked or we had to change something because of CopyFit, which means we fit things on a page precisely. So we might have had to add some words to something. We might have had to shorten and abridge something because that's how publishing works. That is not the time to jump on the message boards, take your developer, and throw her under a bus and say, wow, what I turned in was perfect, but somebody at Parzo decided to mess with perfection. That sort of thing we can see.
We do go on the message boards, and we are annoyed when that happens.
We also have other contacts who also read those sites, and sometimes are like,
yeah,
hey Joe, did you see the news?
That's the best. I love it when that happens.
Really, in the name of professionalism, it's a good idea to conduct yourself professionally in every context that you can. Even from I'm at Gen Con, I'm going to tell all the people that I run into only in person, but not in writing, that the developer messed things up, whatever it is. Just be a professional. We're going to treat you like one. You can treat us like such, and we'll all be happy. So just mind how you manage yourself in public. Okay, that gets my points across.
All right. Excellent. Joe, did you have anything?
That kind of reminds me that to be a successful writer, especially here, you need to come to terms with the idea that many people are going to be working on your writing after you turn it over, and they're going to have, sometimes they're going to make it worse, quite frankly, they're going to make a mistake. But for the most part, we improve the things we get, and then we send it to editors. 3 to 4 people edit it after us, and they will improve it, and, you know, 1 out of every 1,000 times, they're going to make a mistake that's going to annoy you when you see it in the printed book. But for the most part, everybody's here to help you look even better in print. It's really great.
It's your name that ends up on the top of that, that billing list. We're there to make you look like rock stars, and we want to maintain good relationships to help you look like rock stars.
Right. And the more that you can approach this and realize that it's a collaborative team-based process, mm-hmm. and that it is not, it is in no way antagonistic. You know, your developer is not trying to ruin your precious baby. They're not trying to give you the worst assignment ever to make you hate yourself. Usually. I mean, the more that you can realize that we're all in this together and that we all just really want to make the coolest product possible, the better that it's going to be for, you know, you conducting yourself in public and you interacting with your developer and you interacting with other freelancers, the more you can be professional about it. We understand that you're excited. We're excited about the products that we put out. We're excited about the writing that we do as well. But, you know, there is that line that John was saying, and a lot of it is online and in the way that you present yourself, and we take note of that, and, you know, we will have mental list of folks that we know are going to be obnoxious about stuff, and, you know, sometimes we just want to avoid them, so don't be that person.
We should go to the questions, though.
All right. Who has questions for us?
All right.
All right. Let's go in the back there.
I guess, what I mean a lot from what you were saying about freelance writers and how they conduct themselves towards you, even the writing. I guess what I'm meaning is a writer, even if they're in the company or not, or trying to get in front of the door, they need to have humility and humbleness in their own writing. They can't be trying to reach for rockstar status in their first application, right?
Yes.
There's a balance to be struck. We want you to be sure enough of yourself to put yourself forward and take that risk, but
we don't want you to have an overblown sense of what you're doing.
I don't want to meet somebody at Gen Con who hands me a card and says, "Hello, I'm God's gift to role-playing games. You should hire me.
Yeah.
I'll write your next entire AP and hardcover rulebook," because that would be a gift to the gaming community. No.
I'm going to lose that card real quick. just saying.
And questions are good. If you want to do something a little more out there, talk to your developer. Say, "Hey, I was thinking of doing this thing." And then you'll find out whether
that's
cool enough.
Totally. Let's see. Next question. Purple shirt.
I was actually for a little while talking to Jessica Price over email for about a month or two, just discussing possibilities. And then she went radio silent, which I later took as, oh, she was leaving the company. She was probably getting all her ducks in a row on that and didn't exactly have enough time to talk to a prospective freelancer. But everyone who I had talked to previously pointed me to her as a starting point. So as a developer who wants to come in, wants to start doing some freelance work for you guys, who would you actually recommend sending an email to, talking to, trying to get that first starting point?
I would be a good person to get started with. We've had a lot of changes going around in the company, figuring out how we're going to be managing workflow and things. And for right now, Joe is a good person to reach out to for Adventure Path Back Matter. So certainly touch base with Joe. Anything else on the Pathfinder side is mostly going to be me, as I'm sort of allocating resources and being a point of contact for some of our other developers. Of course, John is great for organized play, but it can be good to send out individual emails to multiple people if you're interested in multiple different things.
And if you can provide a little bit of background context of, I have been speaking with X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we will be happy to pick up that ball where it is at the moment. See, next question there.
This might be a basic question that I should already know the answer to, but I have a problem naming stuff sometimes.
So hard.
So, when I'm going to name a dragon, what I actually do is I go to this website that translates the dragon language from Skyrim. I'll pick a few words, cram them together, and do that. Use that. How is that like a professional thing? Or is that something nobody would ever notice?
Now that you have said it out loud.
So a couple different things. One of them just on the side of Easter egg. Like you might be tempted to, I've had this happen with a lot of foreign language things. Like I need you to write this thing in Rampersad, which is kind of a little bit like Cambodia. And they'll be like, oh, well, this person's name in Cambodian translates to blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I don't want direct translations, especially off of somebody else's IP,
yeah.
But also being sensitive to other people's cultures. But looking at either the thing that it's inspired by or looking at other names in print for that setting and being like, okay, what are some of the common sounds? What are the some of the common structures? And start to play with that.
Yeah.
Then that's where I would go with naming practices.
And Google it to make sure it's not used.
Make sure it's not owned by somebody else or it's not a big World of Warcraft character or something that you're just not familiar with that... you know, it has turned up somewhere else that is very well known. It's easy to do, you know. I mean, it's easy to come up with a name that you think sounds really cool, and it turns out that you actually heard that name in a movie and you forgot about it, and now you've accidentally named something that's the main character of a really big franchise that you that everybody else, a lot of other folks will notice, but that you've not. So Googling it is a huge thing. That's a thing that we also do as we're writing and developing because it's just so easy. There's so many things out there.
Oh, and say it out loud.
Yeah, the 11-year-old. Yeah. The 11-year-old test.
Say it out loud in front of other people.
Yeah.
And see if anybody laughs. Because that's
find
like
your most immature friend and then
yeah.
run it by them. And if
yeah,
they
right.
smirk, then change
Or if you see me walking around, I'm a pretty good joke. do we have another question? We have more questions? Up in the front.
So someone without any kind of schooling, writing background, mm-hmm. or professional experience, getting started out, it can be pretty nerve-wracking to take writing that you know, you're not a professional. And basically, tips for kind of soliciting feedback and helping folks working through making sure it's polished and good. Because it can be kind of like speaking politely into the void when you're just approaching random folks on the forums who seem like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. If you have a regular gaming group or if you have some folks online that you know you have a good rapport with, just having people read over your work and giving feedback and, you know, asking them to really be honest, tell them that, you know, you're looking toward publication at some point and asking questions like, you know, what makes sense, what was hard to read, what feels like it needs to be edited, what are good ideas, what are bad ideas, and you know, paying attention to what some common threads are, and that will help to reveal some of your own idiosyncrasies as a writer so that you know what you can specifically work on before you go to a professional and get what can feel like really harsh criticism. Because especially when you're first starting out, it can be very hard to hear criticism, right? Because mm-hmm. this is a thing that you've worked on that's very precious to you, and you have a developer who is saying, like, it's not good enough. yeah, red ink everywhere. You know, it's rough. It's rough for even me, you know, when I see a page that comes back and it's got a bunch of markups on it, and it's like, what did I do wrong? And sometimes the answer is, well, you know, nothing really. It was just, these are things that I thought could be cooler.
And it's also quite valuable while you're here at Gen Con, not just to talk to people you want to work for, but people you want to have in your extended network.
Yeah.
And so you can find other freelance authors and and basically create a little miniature guild. That's the case for the Werecabbages.
Yep.
That's the case for RPG Superstar a couple of years ago had the
Freelance Forge.
And basically what they do is they just sort of, they're working on an assignment, and they can grab a couple of their friends from it and say, can you give this a quick once-over? Or, hey, I'm working on this feat, and I need it to do X, and it's not quite there. Can you give me some initial feedback? And that way you get not just a sounding board, but colleagues and professional sounding boards.
Yeah.
Because your developer will not always have the time to give in-depth feedback on every little thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a 6,000 word assignment, you might be able to send in like 500 words and be like, this is the part I'm most concerned about. And we can be like, okay, good. Thank you for identifying the key piece. I'll help you here. I can't provide you feedback on all 6,000 words.
Right.
Those are also the people that when they can't do an assignment and we ask them to, they'll say, but I know somebody who might be able to. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And that has been very successful for a lot of people who are very established now. They got involved in freelance guilds. They got a lot of colleagues. And then it is a small industry, like I was saying. And you know, when you get your foot in that door, it can open a lot of opportunities for you.
Yeah, so we'll be hanging around a little bit after this, but also look around this room and make some contacts.
My Jefferson?
Sure.
I just think this is probably important. that I've heard you all say before. Mm-hmm. But how do you avoid overcommitting and saying no without burning bridges?
There's no problem about saying no without burning bridges. Yeah. When that's one of the most professional things you can do is recognize your own capacity. Yeah. It's so easy to take on too much. Mm-hmm. And then you start falling behind on deadlines, at which point you start becoming a burden to your developers.
Exactly. You start getting a reputation as somebody who can't hit their deadlines, and it's a cascading waterfall, right? When you start missing deadlines and all of a sudden the things that you were planning on working on before, you're late on those, and you know, when you get three or four of those in a row, you know, we start to think that you can't be trusted to hit your deadlines, and that's really not a good place to be in. So we will, there's no problem with saying I'm too busy, I'm sorry, maybe next time. You don't necessarily even need to give a reason, but we will often respect folks more for saying that they're too overloaded, or being upfront about, I have this other assignment from this other developer, this other company, I will be available after that. That really impresses me when people know their own limits and they don't want to burn us and they don't want to create a bad situation for everybody. That is really impressive.
There's a story about someone backing out of an assignment because their house flooded, which is a pretty good reason.
And
things happen. Go ahead.
But you don't even need, even if your reason is not good, saying as soon as you can that there's a problem is the best thing you can do at that point. And
yeah, that this is exactly way better than just something. Like, yeah,
going silent.
Than just going silent. Absolutely. You want to hit another question up there?
If you're more interested in like the story side and the story aspect, or rather than like knowing everything there is to know about game mechanics, say like you look like looking at a world, compiling like all the lore and love the lore, and you want to put a character in that and let a story flourish, but you're not necessarily solid on game mechanics, would you recommend just committing yourself to learning more about game mechanics, or if you would like to just start writing about like a story sort of thing, what would you recommend doing?
So it sounds like what you're saying might be more within the fiction realm. And Paizo currently doesn't have a whole lot of pure fiction outlets right now. But when it comes to translating that into adventure writing, it's important to have a certain baseline understanding of mechanics. You can create a fantastic adventure using, you know, only the core rulebook and bestiary, and if all your other story mechanics are really solid, it could make a great Pathfinder Society scenario. But you do need to be sufficiently versed that you are designing these stat blocks correctly, that you are calculating your challenge ratings correctly, and that doesn't require deep, deep rules knowledge, but it does require a certain amount of proficiency.
Yeah, absolutely. And please, for the love of God, if you get an assignment, do not write stat block goes here.
In the final turnover,
and just say, well, the developer will take care of it. Yikes. No, please. I've seen that so much in third party, and people just
Nobody warned me about this. Are you kidding me?
Well, they've learned by the time they get to us, but oh my gosh. Yeah, that's rough. Right there.
What can I get started on today?
You can get started on building up your network of contacts, because we'll be assigning more and more things in the coming weeks.
Certainly. Yeah. Back there behind you?
Yes. I have a question about portfolios.
Okay.
And what is the best tool to use to compile a portfolio? Right now I just have a file that is a series of links to PDFs that have been published, and I'm interested, is there like a go-to website, or is there another tool to compile it?
Really whatever works. I find that most folks send me individual PDFs and they attach it to an email, and that works just fine. You can send a link to a site, but the more digging that it requires, and the more that, you know, say you have one or two things that you want us to read, and you're sending us to a page with 50 different things on it, that's just probably going to be a thing that I look at later on down the line, just because it requires a little more effort.
Or that I'm going to skim. So, there are some of the people in the open call who have submitted like four things, and it's unclear to me which one's going to be your best. So if you're going to send me like a list of 50 feats that you've done, I'd love you to be able to identify three of them that you're like, I'm really proud of these ones.
Yes, absolutely.
I would like you to consider these my writing sample. And I'll probably look at some of the others, but I have limited time to really be researching this.
Yeah, sending two or three good, strong writing samples that you're really proud of that show the breadth of what it is that you want to do, that you feel like represents your talents the best, in individual PDFs and an email is, for me personally, probably the easiest thing.
Yeah, and if you're sending anything that's not like PDF or published on another site or the like, and you're just putting it into the body of an email, just for our own sakes, identifying it clearly as a writing sample is
not helpful. A pitch that we can't read, so we'll just delete it.
Yeah. We can probably take one quick one, and then otherwise we'll be outside here, and you can talk to us as much as you want out there. Okay. So last one.
Last question. Somebody who hasn't gone, if we can. Okay, go for it.
Could the process for getting in on art or photography come from writing?
The person you'll want to talk to is Adam Vick, who is down in the Paizo booth. So if you have a portfolio of cartography or art that you would like to meet with him about, then you can do so here.
Yep, and there have been a lot of folks to the show who have been doing that. So.
And on Paizo.com, if you open up Paizo.com, you'll see a banner of a whole bunch of links along the left side. There's a job opportunities link, and at the very top of that is an email address to which you can send portfolios as well.
I have one last tip I know a lot of people are really into flavor and feel like they're weak on mechanics. Play Starfinder. Play Pathfinder, too. Play the game. Drop in on Society Play. I pointed John because it's Society.
It's real easy to get experience with the
so
game.
Much, it goes a long way to getting more comfortable with how things work. And then look at existing mechanical things. And often we want that language anyway.
Yeah, copy the language.
Yeah.
And even as a volunteer, getting your foot in the door, I recognize a lot of our volunteers now. So if they approach me and say, oh, hey, I'm interested in doing more, but on a professional level, I at least have a starting contact. So doing organized play and building your community can show a different style of commitment that is still very valuable to us.
Absolutely. And I think that that ends our time. So thank you guys so much for coming to the panel. We'll be up here for a couple minutes. We'll be out in the hall. We'll be down in the booth. We look forward to seeing you.
And let's go ahead and actually see about clearing out so we can make room for the next panel.